Welcome to Accounting High.
Check me out right here, yo.
Yo, the fun don't last forever, but as long as we're here, then we might as well laugh together. Better now than ever, did this for good measure. Scotty, Accountant High, who you know do it better. Yeah, right, this March Atmos game is so tight. Start with the 64 team bracket, we did it right. Sorry, Blake, earmark went packing after the Elite Eight. Cloud Accounting Pod is great, but too late. Future Firm was only two games away from winning, baby. Gusto got smashed by an uncat army. Ignition, our sponsor, last Saturday they choked. ABC turning down the last teams, no joke. Journey ends with two now, it's Stats and Uncat. Uncat came too far to bow down to Stats. Jason may think he can plow through Uncat, but when he making up facts, they raking up stats.
Welcome, students, to the Accounting High Auditorium. We're here to announce the launch of the Accountant Bracket Challenge. I got my head IT department here with me today, Byron Patrick. What's up, homies?
What's happening? Excited to be back for year two.
Yeah, this is exciting. This is year two of the Accountant Bracket Challenge ABC Tournament. This is the big one. This is where we gather 64 different things in the accounting space, all presented to you on one bracket. One winner will defeat them all. Last year, our winner was Uncat. It was the championship of Uncat and Stats.
Cinderella story.
Will there be a repeat this year? Will Uncat come in as a one seed? Will Uncat even make it into the tournament? Will Jason Stats win it all this year? Will Scott write a rap just for Stats? Only time will tell. First and foremost, how do they find this Accountant Bracket Challenge?
To find the challenge on the web, just go to abc.accountinghigh.com.
Okay, abc.accountinghigh.com. It's easy as ABC. This is it, Accountant Bracket Challenge. Go there, log in. This is what you're going to do. You're nominating the top five things in your accounting world. Byron, what could those things be?
Those things could be apps, technology specific. Those things could be podcasts where you're learning amazing things that you're applying to your world in accounting. It could be communities, if you're a part of communities that you get a lot of value from, or educational platforms that you participate in, or it could be influencers, just people out there who are making your day better as an accountant.
I love that. And there's so many possibilities, so many options. Byron, how many different nominations did we get last year?
Last year, we had over 200 different things nominated. I have a funny feeling it's going to be more this year.
200, and we narrowed it down to 64, and it was 64 competing for the championship. That's what we're going to do again this year, but we can only do it if you come in and nominate. Go now to abc.accountinghigh.com and nominate your top five things. What was the weirdest nomination that we got last year? The Stanley Cup? It was my 20-ounce Stanley Cup?
I think that's it. The 20-ounce Stanley Cup.
You know, ChatGPT didn't make it into the tournament last year. Did they get any nominations last year?
I believe there was a couple of nominations that came in. But, you know, remember, it was so early in this journey of generative AI.
That nobody knew, frankly, what ChatGPT was. We didn't even know what the GPT stood for. I think most people don't still. But that was around the time where we were just exploring what this
was. It was a random number generator for us. That's what
that
it was.
That was what it was to us during the tournament. Is it spit out numbers.
Such an underutilization of the
total underutilization. We'll see what it does for us this year. It already analyzed all of our surveys. So for anybody that was involved last year that left their surveys, thank you. Thank you. We got all the data. We want to make this tournament better this year, just for you, just for our students. This is a blast. We had so much fun last year. I could not predict what would happen at the end this year. I'm only going by what I know. Let's also share with our students how they're going to log in this year, Byron. So
oh, yeah.
This year, we've made a change to how you log in. We're going to verify our users so your moms and your grandmas and your brothers and sisters aren't all going to help you with the school fundraiser. We want real students participating in this. We don't want any people from the high school next door, all right? So only Accounting High students.
No middle schoolers are voting.
Verifying that through our partners at LinkedIn. Our wonderful partners at LinkedIn have come in to save the day to verify all of your student IDs. Here we go. Thank you, LinkedIn, for your support with all of this. You cannot nominate the same thing twice. Last year, we had some people nominate one thing five times. They nominated the same thing five times. That's not going to be allowed this year. So please don't cheat the system. We want to preserve the integrity of the data here. All of this is just to figure out what are the top 64 things in the accounting world. Thank you all for paying attention and joining us at our accounting bracket challenge. Byron, thank you for keeping this running, keeping the oil greased up on the gears here.
No doubt. I'm excited for year two, man. This is going to be crazy. Bigger, better, more exciting.
We got a lot of live shows planned. This is your ad. This is your preview for the Accountant Bracket Challenge 2024. Thank you, Byron.
Whoop, whoop.
Peace out, homies.
Our class, it's the guide. Please take a seat. Step into this unique guidance session. Navigate with me. It's the capital S. Oh, yes, I'm fresh. C-O-O-T-Y apostrophe OKR apostrophe. You see, the show is intended to guide you with advice. Vision goals on mission. It's time accounting high. Yeah, this profession. I think they're in the mood for some fun and inspiration.
Hell yeah.
Okay.
What up, Scott?
Gotta lead with ambition.
What's that, greed?
Gotta grab your attention.
Intention?
And it's gotta be abundant.
Public accountants.
In unexpected places, we ask for your attention. Conversations about the state of the profession. Emotional intelligence, atomic habits in a bundle. Infinite game, Rye Holiday, we stay humble. Find your purpose in class with tech apps. Jedi mindsets, James Ash has got your back. For Hells to discuss her vision for the profession. Evolution conversation with Jeff Wilson II. And I'ma continue to put the rap down with impact now. And if you're active listening, mind the imagination gap now. Yeah, Janitor Scott coming to you live from the closet with a bucket and a mop. So find a cozy spot. We all want financial freedom. A-C-C-O-U-N-T-I-N-G-H-I-G-H. Preach, putting this course together. Sit back, relax, open your mind. Class is in session.
Guidance class at Accounting High. It's guidance class at Accounting High. And it's guidance
Monday and Accounting High show.
So tune in to the next episode.
Introducing the star of our show,
Scotty and Megan.
We're gonna have a problem here.
Class is in session.
Thanks,
what's up,
Dad?
Megan? Megan Blair with me today from Nantucket, Massachusetts, coming in live with a big hashtag behind her. Thank you for joining me, Megan.
Thanks for having me. This is fun.
Why don't you start by telling our students a little bit about yourself, how you got involved in the accounting space, and kind of what brought you here. You can go back as far as high school or even further.
So definitely a non-traditional path. I started in accounting by accident. I had a newborn baby. My ex-husband had a construction business, and I started doing the books for his business. I started doing books and getting involved in finance onto my arts education background for a nonprofit. And when my ex-husband got really sick and we were like maybe 4 months into a brand new mortgage, something had to change, and I picked up some bookkeeping clients to pay the bills. It was not what I set out to do as a career. I did not think it was going to last. I literally said to my first customer, I heard you lost your bookkeeper. Let me help you for a couple of months. Will you find your permanent person? Like, it was a friend of my ex-husband's. I was like, I need some extra money and you need some help in the meantime. He ended up being.
So is that all it was a way that makes some easy extra money?
Yeah,
why bookkeeping? Why not just like cleaning houses or something?
Teaching art classes paid about $12 an hour.
Okay.
Cleaning houses around here might have paid 20, bookkeeping was like 65 or 70.
Boom.
And that was a long time ago. And there was a class in my community. It was $800. And like, I think this is what's missing in the accounting space right now, right? It was $800. It was taught by somebody that like knew their she knew the technology side and she knew the accounting side. So you went to class 2 days a week. It was in the evening. They provided childcare for $800. And you went into this computer lab. And on
That's it right there. $800 would have been the childcare. The cost of that right there. Yeah.
Right. So the kids were like, it was in the high school. The kids were across the hall in a playroom. We all, there probably were 30 women and it was all women. And I've taught this class subsequently. I've had maybe less than a dozen men. And she called it Trades for Chicks. She's like, you know, guys will go out and they'll learn plumbing or they'll learn to be electricians, but like you can't take kids to those jobs. And so many women needed work from home stuff that you work around nap time and doctor's appointments and preschool pickup time that was like ridiculously early. And so on Tuesday, she taught debits and credits. And on Thursday, she taught QuickBooks and it was affordable. And she used like real world case studies. She had clients that had contributed anonymized bank statements and payroll stuff. And this was like pre-QBO. And you went in and you practiced the data entry and you learned to make a chart of accounts. And like, then she taught you how to do FIFO inventory with QuickBooks and create all these workarounds. She was awesome. And I came out with enough knowledge to take on a client. And I worked with smart CPAs and tax accountants that didn't mind answering questions for me. And at that point in time, it was so hard to find a good bookkeeper. Like if you just answered the phone and responded to emails, people wanted in the door. In less than a year, I went from one client to probably 10. It was good enough money that I was still pursuing my undergrad. Like I dropped out of school because I was too busy and was like, we'll see where this goes.
Well, that seemed very practical too. With the stuff you're learning in school wasn't as hands-on and it wasn't as real as what you learned in this Tricks for Chicks.
I was in school to be an arts educator and the CFO of the nonprofit I was working for sat me down and was like, what are you doing? You are never going to make enough money to pay back those student loans. And where are you going to work? The art teacher here at the public high school isn't going anywhere for 20 years. Like she has a long time till she's retiring. And like 21-year-old new mom me who wasn't married to my daughter's father and was living in a apartment was like, yeah, you're probably right. He had been the CFO of Interpublic, Sotheby's, and Exxon in his public career. He probably knew what he was talking about.
Right.
And so in between teaching me how to do like large scale budgets for nonprofits, he like talked some sense into me and was like, you really should pursue some finance. And this whole business took off and I ended up leaving that position. He's still a mentor of mine, but I ended up building an accounting practice. And I went back to, you know, community college and took real accounting classes, but there was nothing I learned in those accounting classes that that woman didn't teach in that $800 class.
Oh, wow.
And that was back when like the pathway into the industry was paved with a lot of like beginner data entry.
Sure.
You know, still she would toss me jobs and be like, here's 12 months of bank statements. You want to pound these into QuickBooks desktop for me? And I would sit there for days, like key the stuff in. And that those classes don't like people ask for them all the time. And other than like, if I fire up one in my community, like I don't, and I still don't like offer childcare or anything anymore. And it's much more expensive. Like how do people find their way into the industry if not through an accounting college program? Cause we're all talking about that. That's a problem. Right.
And nobody seems to be that interested in any way. And it sounds like for you at that stage, you're into art. Tell me, what was it about accounting, besides the fact that you can make five times as much doing that than art? What else was it about it that you were drawn toward?
It put food on my table. Seriously, Scott. Like, it was about, like, I was going to lose my house that I just bought. This is like 2008. Like, this is...
Yeah, well, 2008 was a rough time.
You know, 2002 to 2008, like, I had just bought a house. I'd started this business. My ex-husband was sick and he's a carpenter, right? So, and he's being told like what he was sick with. He couldn't lift more than a milk jug. Like it's food on the table time. My daughter asked me when she was picking colleges, how did you choose to be an accountant? I was like, there wasn't a whole lot of choosing. There was a lot of putting food on the table. There was a lot of keeping the lights on, but there wasn't a lot of choosing. There was something about it, I guess, that appealed to me about making order out of chaos. Probably speaks to like trauma in my childhood or something, but like I liked when people would bring me, you know, and again, this is pre-digital, like the box of chaos. I mean, people brought us suitcases. There was like dirty laundry underneath the piles of receipts and the check ledgers. I had milk crates come in and it's like from a stonemason and everything's covered in stone dust and you gotta like shake it all off before you can do anything with it. Like, I liked helping those people, often in a bad place. We got a lot of referrals early on from attorneys that were like, we're going into this court case and this guy doesn't even know which end is up. Can you straighten him out? People in tax trouble, like, hey, they've got 10 years of filings they got to get caught up on. Can you help them out? Sales tax trouble, that kind of thing. And we would roll our sleeves up. That time it was like me and one other person. And you just made sense of the mess. And you got them to a place where there was clarity. And so I was putting food on my table, but early on, I was putting food on a lot of other people's tables too. Like, they were on the brink of going under or having something really bad happen. And we created the clarity they needed to get through the court case or sort out the tax issue or deal with the workman's comp audit or whatever it was. So to see them put food on their tables, I went to a lot of weddings for clients, you know, we became like part of their family.
So that was the next question is, you know, beyond the compensation, it sounded like you had a lot of compassion for the people that you were working with and drew a lot of connections through there because it's a smaller community. So a lot of these people you were either going to and saying, look, I can help you out and do this, or they were coming to you through either word of mouth or through somebody else that you helped and finding that. And there you're finding more purpose and more direction beyond just putting money, beyond just the compensation.
We got our first like big deal public name client, like family office, had been the chair at Google in his career. We got that job because of a client that was in trouble. They had found out their father-in-law had been doing the books for their business. And they came to me one day and was like, he just showed up at my house and he dropped this milk crate of stuff and told us we were out of money. And I don't know what happened. And as we went through the forensics of it, like he'd been stealing, their own family had been stealing from them. And I worked with that family for more than a year. This is like a local small business to sort out their stuff. They were like in disaster mode. They were like, I think I need to sell my house. Like, I don't know what else to do. And like, they had a bakery and nobody had ever taught them how to food cost, how to manage inventory. And we got it together. And I literally worked for muffins and cookies for like 9 months. Right? Like, they'd show up on Sunday. We'd have a lesson. They'd leave me some bagels. Life was good, right? But the turnaround on that was that
you're putting food on the table again.
And when they got tapped to work for the private equity part of like a big deal family office out of California, they said, we'll come run your bakery. And I can share all this because it's public. They've shared this story publicly before, not telling tales out of school. But they said, you know, we'll come be your bakers and be your general managers in this bakery. But we'd like Megan and her team at Fogden to come in and do the finances. And we did. And that spawned a major boom in my business and a major change of direction. And it was less hand to mouth and more building a team, developing a business model around high net worth individuals and family offices, and getting to work with some really talented folks in their home office in California that were willing to share a lot with us.
So you found your niche. What year was this?
2007, 2008, maybe.
Oh, so still like, around then.
No, yeah, so a while, like my kids were still real little. And so the priority, you know, the priority for me in building a business and not just going to work for somebody else was always the ability to like just put my kids first for me. That was always like my number one priority. That was the thing that anchored me. I needed, wanted to be at the school play or to coach the kids' soccer team and wanted that flexibility. And back then that wasn't the standard. Mm-mm. Like work from home, remote work was not what other firms were doing.
Well, you were still chained to the desktop back then too, anyway. Like that was
But we were using this company called Right Networks, and we were cloud hosting our stuff. Like I've been with them probably like 18 of the 20 years.
So you were just remoting in.
Yeah, we had our first, I wasn't going to people's offices for sure. We were doing remote paperless accounting really early on because Nantucket's an island 30 miles out at sea. You only have so many clients you can serve and your talent pool is really small. So if I wanted to recruit talent and keep this business going at the level I wanted it to move at, like we went remote a decade before everybody else. We had a really great in-office employee whose husband wanted to retire. They wanted to move to Florida. I was like, that's cool, Mary. You can move to Florida, but you're not quitting. We're going to do this remote. So I had an awesome employee I had trust with that was patient with me while I learned how to be a remote boss. So yeah, we had like an office, a real like office that people came into, but that was optional. We had remote employees and we didn't go to any of our clients really early. So when COVID happened, that was no big change for us.
You were already out on an island. You were already isolated anyway.
We've been in that mode for more than a decade when COVID happened. Like we'd been working remotely.
So my vision of Nantucket is, you know, that New England area with a lot of fog and mist, especially out in the mornings when you go outside, it's a little cold. So tell me, how did you get the name of your practice?
This is amazing. Marketing genius on my part. I had to go register a DBA and I was behind a car in traffic and the license plate said fogged in. And I was like, that's it.
Genius.
Rock, hard place. Like marketing and creativity is not my forte. And that's really how it happened.
So, but you said making order out of chaos, or from chaos comes clarity. Mm-hmm. And you had the clarity or the vision to see through the fog.
Yes.
So to speak.
Yes. And that is, I mean, that's the tongue in cheek of it all. And people in San Francisco get it. People in Boston get it. If I say it to someone in Iowa, they're like, what is the name of your business? What are you talking about?
If I dropped a milk crate that's covered in dust, it's going to create a fog of smoke up in the air. Right. And that's sort of what you're doing is seeing through that.
Yeah.
And telling a story through the numbers.
Yep.
That's pretty cool. So you're on this journey. You built up your practice. Tell me again about the 2010s for you, how that went. Where'd you end up when you got to COVID stage? What was the size of your practice?
Yeah. So we got good size. 2010s, we've got brick and mortar office. We're moving people from paper and filing cabinet systems into being digital. So they sign up with us. They're largely like old school, huge file cabinets, and we're moving them into the digital age, and they're working with remote teams, and we're part of that, I don't know, evolution in the industry, but really at the cutting edge of it. As we learned more about automation, the team starts to get smaller, but the market share and the number of clients gets bigger because you can do more with less people, right? And inevitably, our office space got purchased, and the rent was going to triple, and all of a sudden, the model of brick and mortar didn't make sense. And we shifted. We went even more digital, even more remote, employees from even more different states, and just moved it more into high gear, more at the cutting edge of what the industry was doing. And I liked it because it put me at home at 2 o'clock when my kids got home. You know, there's something about, as a parent, seeing their faces at 2 o'clock and knowing what they're up to. And that worked. And I had a couple of employees that I had one employee in particular who was like, my husband's going to divorce me if I work from home because I don't know when to stop. And so can I come work at your place? And we had, you know, a couple of offices added onto my house. And for the women that worked here, it was a big deal because their kids could, my office is within walking distance of the school, and their kids came here too. And the kids sat at the dining room table and like all did homework together and then would walk to skating practice or football together. And
everyone's literally doing homework at that time. Then you're working from home.
It's that it takes a village idea. And it really is what's happening. Like we allowed women when their maternity leave was over to bring babies into the office up to 9 months. Generally when they started crawling and could eat a paper clip off the floor, I got nervous.
Sure.
But so this place was always sort of like family first, and that informed a lot of how we grew, what we chose to take on, the clients we wanted to work with. And then COVID happens, and those couple of people that were coming here and the kids that were coming here after school, all of a sudden we had to be like, sorry, y'all gotta stay home. But it wasn't terrible. And I think for me, what really changed was the obviousness of what our clients needed from us. All of a sudden, everybody is in turmoil. Everybody's business is at risk. These ERC and PPP rules are like rolling out by the hour with about as much clarity as a fog bank. We're like, what is happening? And so because we were digital and remote already, we were poised to act quickly. People were already digitally uploading stuff to us. Like, we didn't have to shift much about our workflow.
Just had to shift your mindset a little bit.
We had to shift our, we just added a layer. Like, our mindset was already focused on, like, we were always high touch. We were always advisory. We were always like sort of up to our elbows in our clients' businesses. We were never just like posting the bills. We were already doing cash flow advisory and management and HR stuff. And like, we were very hands-on. So it was just this new layer of what do we do? And it was exhausting. Because when you're that close with your clients and you're like getting invited to their weddings and their kids' baptisms and whatever else, and you're part of the family, the amount of emotional responsibility when all of a sudden like 200 businesses are at risk. We were, you know, we were heavily anchored in hospitality, like restaurants. And for them, that was
the end of the world.
You know, there was a good 9 months. Like, we did not know one day to the next what was going to happen. It defines you, but it is exhausting. We didn't have a single client close long-term. Everybody made it out, not just in one piece, but thriving. We guided a lot of pivots. We did a lot of PPP, ERC, complicated stuff, you know, took advantage of government programs where it's appropriate, convinced people when it wasn't.
Yeah.
You know,
didn't take advantage of people, took advantage of the programs.
Yep. But it was, we had clients that we just put their fees with us on hold for 6 months. And we're just like, let's see what happens, but kept doing the work. Not something I probably would advise other people to do.
Yeah. How are you going to recoup those fees?
But I was willing to take the risk. Once I knew that like our firm got a little PPP money, we created some flexibility for our clients to see what was going to happen. And in the end, it all worked out. Everybody stayed and it all worked out good, but it was emotionally exhausting to the point that as we rounded that bend, like, I wasn't sure I wanted to do this anymore.
Which is essentially what happened.
Yeah.
You burned like, yourself out.
I got burnt out. I got burnt out carrying the emotional load. It's unsustainable to care about your clients as much as I cared about my clients and my team. My team went through it. We had heart attacks. We had siblings dying of COVID, burst gallbladders, parents dying, major relocation. Like, it was a lot as a boss to be a good boss through all of that.
So as a mother and as a leader, even before COVID, you were taking on a lot of burdens and basically absorbing that through your leadership and through your guidance with everybody else. Multiply that by 10 and you have COVID. Because anybody that maybe wasn't necessarily a problem or having a problem and somebody that you didn't have to help, now all of a sudden you got to help them too. And everybody else that already was, that you were shouldering burdens for. So I can only imagine how that felt during that time. You could have been thriving in the moment, but then as it subsides, that's maybe when you feel all of it.
Yeah.
You feel it when the noise gets quiet, when the clarity comes.
Yeah, the adrenaline gets you through it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
When the adrenaline's over, you're like, and it got to the point where like on Tuesday afternoons at 3 o'clock, I was like in the fetal position in my bed with my laptop. And my husband, who at that point is working from home too, comes upstairs and he's like, are you okay? Like, this wasn't a one-off. This became a thing. And what I realized was on Tuesdays, I was running payroll. Like, it was one of the few client participation things. You know, I was doing a lot of managing relationships and sales and managing a team, but it was one of the few pieces of client work that I was still doing. And I was just exhausted when it was over. And I wasn't exhausted. Like, keying in payroll isn't hard. I mean, these are big payrolls. It's like 180 employees or whatever, but that's not the hard part. The hard part is the emotional tie to, at the time was, you know, hospitality payrolls, a lot of minimum wage folks. I'm running these minimum wage payrolls and I volunteer at the food pantry and I'm watching the same people that I'm writing paychecks for. I know how much money they're making. I know they're working 70, 80 hours a week. And then I'm turning around and seeing them come through the door of the pantry because I also know that that paycheck doesn't cover rent and food. So
it's less than hand to mouth.
Right. And like, this isn't unique to Nantucket, right? This is as a nation, something we're spending a lot of time talking about right now, right? Like over the last decade, the top 1% has gotten, and corporations have gotten fabulously wealthy, and the minimum wage worker and people like my kids, right, are having a hard, my kids in their inner 20s. What would have been a good job for our parents, you know, would have been a single income household and put a kid through college and pay your mortgage and put food on the table. Like, these kids can't even pay their student loans with a good job. And so I really started to question my place in this system where I'm watching people that are busting their butt, not have health care, not be able to afford food, but I'm also writing these major checks to investors. And I'm seeing both sides of this. And I just didn't know where my place in this was anymore. And like, weekly payroll was the place where all that sort of emotionally came together.
You'd see the numbers and you became an activist.
Yeah.
Through that, or you wanted to be.
Wanted to be.
Do something to help to change it.
And we had good, this is the thing, this is not to vilify my clients. I had great clients with hearts in the right places that wanted to do the right thing, take pride in their employees, but the construct of taking on an investor sometimes doesn't allow, right? So my clients aren't bad people. They're trying to do the right thing by people, but they have, you know, they have to put food on the table at home and they are answering to investors or banks or whatever. And that's hard. And I think when I look back, the exhaustion and the being there for team, for clients, whatever, like I wasn't managing well. Like, I didn't have great boundaries. I didn't know how to leave that at the office. I just didn't. And I looked at my husband and was just like, I think I just need to be done. There was a 6-month period where like, all that employee stuff was happening. You know, parents are dying and siblings are dying of COVID. And it was like, for real, like totally legitimate reasons to need leave from work. And I had an awesome team and they continued to show up however they could show up. And we were piecing it together every day. But man, like, I got nervous. You know, we were a small team. We were like 5 or 6 at that point. And I started to feel like I was putting my clients at risk, because if we all went belly up, you know, like if everybody had legitimately just taken leave, which they all would have been entitled to, and we hadn't pieced it together, like, we were too involved with our clients' businesses. Like, our clients wouldn't have been able to pay their own bills or run their own payroll. Like, so I felt like at that moment I needed to either grow and scale and get bigger so that we were more resilient to market forces and individual circumstances, or I needed to sell the business to somebody that was, so that my clients were in a safer place. And the byproduct of that needed to be me getting some burnout recovery. And so ultimately, I just didn't feel like I could do the burnout recovery and scale. So I opted to sell the firm and started sort of shopping around. And that was probably a year and a half, 2-year journey.
When I saw you at Appy Camp last year, were those conversations have starting to
they were happen? Well, on their way.
They were on their way.
So we had started conversations, put some things on hold for the summer, and we're sort of circling back around to a final deal when I saw you at Appy Camp.
And that was October 2022?
Yeah.
Ish?
Yep.
By the time I saw you in December 2022 at QuickBooks Connect, you had already made an announcement that you sold. So things happen pretty quick when you know you've made up your mind.
I had made up my mind long before October. This is the awesome thing about the accounting community. I didn't have to advertise. I didn't have to hire an agent. Like, I didn't have a broker. I put out through Thrival an accounting salon that I was ready to move on to something else and I was looking to sell. And through those two conversations, you know, more than two conversations, but those two events and sort of putting it out into those groups of people, like, offers started to come in and we vetted through more than a dozen companies.
So what was it about Growth Lab? Fogged in, powered by the Growth Lab.
Yeah. So I felt like my team and my clients were going to land in a good place for them. In shopping around, I really looked for the buyer that was going to treat my clients and my team the best. That was the priority. And they did. I mean, it really, like, I am still, I talked to Dan last week, like, I'm still impressed at how good a fit for my clients and my team it was. Team's all still there. Nearly all of the clients are still there. And the clients that transitioned are clients that probably would have transitioned anyways, given one or two. My team's happy. I think I did a really good job shopping around for them.
Sure. And there's a lot of firms out there that would have just burned and turned all of this. I know some personally that would have just treated this like a transaction, added this to their top line and been moved on. And if the team leaves, who cares? If the clients leave, who cares? And it's just another transaction. At the Growth Lab, I went to their retreat or their convention that they had with their team. I met a lot of their team one-on-one.
Oh, that's cool.
And they love their jobs. They get a lot of fulfillment out of it and they're treated well, a lot of the people there. It's a pretty good vibe that they've put together. So, you know, you made the right choice. And that's what a lot of firm owners are dealing with now post COVID is, do you grow and scale or do you sell and ship out and phase out?
There's prep work you have to do if the choices sell. You, like, I didn't just wake up one day and go, it's for sale. Like,
It's a hard decision. You spent over 10 years building this.
It was 20. I had a 20-year business when we sold it. But the 2 years leading up to it, I knew this was a possibility. And so I started to, you know, we implemented Carbon. We really weeded through a lot of clients. We underwent pricing change to better align with the market. We still probably weren't quite at the top end of market, but we moved people up and that, you know, sort of customers out too. We really made process much more uniform, no more one-offs because the client wants it that way. COVID helped us do some of that. It put some clients' feet to the fire on a few things. So it was not a wake up one day and decide to do it. There's a lot of like positioning
you
need to do to be attractive to a buyer. But yeah.
And you were already positioned in a good place leading into that COVID anyway, because you were already doing things pretty advanced.
Yes. So yeah, we had a total head start, but you know, putting things like Carbon in place, you know, whether you use Carbon or ClickUp or, you know, whatever your firm management tool is, like, I don't know that anybody would have bought us without having something in place.
Yeah, I say that Carbon's a huge reason why we were able to, why COVID wasn't really necessarily a thing for us, why we were able to transition from an office to no office, because everything was not managed in the office physically. It was managed in the back office of Carbon.
It got us through, and I've told Ann and the team at Carbon this story, like, it got us through those days where literally, like, I'm trying to get married. Mary had a heart attack. Someone else in the office has their sibling dying of COVID and their gallbladder ruptures, and Haley's mother's dying in the hospital. Like, every day we would just come together, morning meeting, look at Carbon, reassign the tasks accordingly. Like, we made it through a 3-month stretch like that. And if we hadn't had Carbon in place, like, there's no way. There's no way. It's also the antidote to my ADHD. So,
sure. Well, this is you just defined chaos, right? And the fog is you're able to have clarity through that. You realize the decision you had to make was, I got to sell this. This is not my calling anymore. And you did.
I did not have the fuel in reserve that my clients
burned through all that fuel.
Yep.
that was your reserve fuel, was all of the extra that you did on top of everything you were already doing.
Yep.
During the added chaos.
Yep.
Which got you through it for sure. But then you're tapping into reserves that you don't have, and it's eating away at you.
Right. And I think some firms ate through financial reserves during COVID. We were more profitable than we'd ever been. I ate through my personal reserves.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Did you know when you were going to sell, when your exit would be, when your full exit would be? Or did you express that to your team, or how did that go?
No, because it wasn't, my full exit wasn't the plan. My plan was to stay at Growth Labs. And like I said, everybody has a plan until you get punched in the face. And it, you know, all
and Dan punched you in the face. what happened there?
It wasn't the place for me. I think there's a lot of employees that are really happy there. My team's really happy there. It wasn't the right environment for me.
Well, you're used to being the leader. You were used to being the person that controlled and called the shots because you were doing a very good job of it. And it worked out for you and your team. But then go into a situation where then you have to be the commander, or with the commander, you have to take commands, and you're not necessarily in a position to call the shots anymore. That's got to be hard too.
Yeah, no. Like, I was ready to not be in charge because I was depleted.
Sure.
Like, I was ready to just plug into a plan and execute on a plan and report into work every day. It's hard to tell the story, I think, fully and not knock on people, because this is hard. But what I will say is this, so I have ADHD, I'm neurodiverse, and that gives me some really awesome superpowers, Scott. Like, I know you know this.
I know this.
And they're incredibly valuable in the world of accounting and advisory, because you see this with my kind of nerd divergence. You see the interconnectedness of pieces. And so while someone might be like, I don't understand why XYZ is happening, a lot of times you see all the XYZs and why they're happening and how they influence one another. And on some days that can be incredibly overwhelming in your brain. But if you've reined that in and you've learned to master it, it's a superpower in what we do. But with neurodivergence, there's also things that come with that. Like, I have a really hard time telling a 3-sentence story, right? I don't struggle so much with executive function, but some people do. It means I have a hard time just sort of swallowing someone telling me because I said so, right? When you see the interconnectedness and the cause and effect of things, and someone just says, just do this because I said so, it's not because I'm not ready to give up authority. It's because I really feel like we're doing the wrong thing.
Yeah. What? Right. Why did you just say so? Give me a real reason why. Right. I don't want this platitude of just do it.
Right.
Tell me why.
And as an adult, and I had a harder time with this early in my career, now I've gotten pretty good. Working for a long time with a big corporation like Intuit, you learn like there's things where just do it, you're fine. Like, you just swallow it and it's fine. And there's things that you choose to stand your ground on because it really matters. And so, when I am in a workplace, I need to be in a workplace that values what's a superpower, accepts where my challenges are, and understands that the whole me is who I need to be to thrive for myself, but also to deliver my best value. Like, if you're hiring me because of the skills and what I've accomplished, like, that's a package deal. You can't pick and choose. This isn't like a Wendy's biggie bag value meal. Like, you don't get to pick and choose. You got to take the whole thing. And so there's environments that are built for that and where that thrives. And there's environments where that I'm not going to thrive and that aren't built to accept the whole me. And it wasn't a place where the whole me was going to thrive. And luckily, I was able to identify that like pretty quickly and made the choice to leave. But that wasn't the plan. The plan was for me to stay long term. So I think my team was shocked when they heard I was leaving. And there was a lot of coaching and conversation to establish that this was my choice about me, not about my feeling about the company or about their position there. Like, I felt like they were going to be in a good place. And ultimately,
and it turns out that they were, and they are in a good place.
Yeah, they are. It is the right place for them.
You made the right choice for them, which was one of your priorities. You may have and could have chosen another path that was right for you, But that wasn't your top of mind when you were making this decision.
No,
nor should it be, because I think, yeah, if you want some sustainability for the people that you nurtured and grew, then that's your first and foremost thing is what's going to be the right home for them, because I'm the one making this decision to sell.
Right.
So if everybody's going to win, then you're going to have to put aside some selfish reasons for all of that and do the best thing for them, which turned out wasn't the best thing for you. You found your way out and now you're left with, well, now what?
Right.
You had a lot of clarity. You got a lot of clear skies in front of you, and that must have caused a lot of stress. I can only imagine how much stress you were in when you thought you had it all figured out. You thought you were going to stay there, and then you leave, and this was last year, and you have this vast open sea of possibilities. I would have crumbled under that situation. That would have been the most stressful of anything.
And the high performer in me, like, the instinct is go get another job, right? Like, I remember my sister was unemployed for a period of time. Her husband's in the military. And my dad would ask, like, every week when he talked to her, like, so when are you going to get a job? You know, it's this very, I don't know, probably new.
Everybody probably asks that. What do you do?
Right?
You have to associate yourself with making money. Now, did you need a job at this point? After you sold your practice, you're married. And if your husband's working, did you actually even need a job?
So this is what's so crazy is, like, financially, I'm just coming out of an exit. I've got cash on hand. Like, I'd saved some, and I've got a gainfully employed spouse, right? But for my entire life, since I was 16 years old, I've supported myself. I was a mom at 20. I bought my first house at 21. I was divorced before I was 30. Like, I've never depended.
You grew a business for 20 years.
Yeah. Like, I've never depended on someone else to pay my bills. And I have always worked my ass off.
Yeah.
You know, like, straight out of high school, I chambermaided, drove taxi, and nannied. Like, I worked 80 hours a week. Like, I didn't know how to not be employed. You know, any firm owner out there knows, like, it is not a full-time job. It is like a three times job. And so I was panicked. I was like, how do I not have a job? Like, how does that work? And I resisted the temptation to just jump into a job. And I took what I ended up calling a sabbatical, because when you tell people I'm just unemployed, your good and loving friends try to find you a job because
they feel that empathy and they feel sympathy for you. They feel pity for you. And then all of a sudden you're like, wait a second, I'm good. I don't need this.
Yeah.
Don't try to fix my problem here.
Yeah. So I learned to call it a sabbatical, and I learned to treat it as a sabbatical. I'd been putting food on the table for 20 years, putting other people first, making sure my kids were well taken care of. So this was my time to go figure out, like, what do I actually want to do? Who am I? Like, who am I when my job is not who I am? And that's scary as hell.
I know it. Know it for our students. They may know that I kind of, like, created that situation for myself without actually selling my firm. I just removed myself from it altogether. And God, I have been depressed. Like, I've been doing all this cool stuff. I'm rapping, been going to conferences and all that, but it's not making any money. And that's what made me depressed is, I have to be earning money. And even though I'm making money for my firm, like, that's still a paycheck, I don't feel like I'm actually earning it either. So, you know, like, in your situation, you sold your practice, you have money in the bank, your husband is actively working, making money, and you feel like you have no worth. That's how I felt. And it's not true for me. It's not true, but it's how I felt. Mm-hmm. Even though I'm doing all these things, I got a show and all that, because I wasn't actively earning money. And I still, in some ways, tell myself that story. So I'm going to ask you, were you trying to tell yourself a new story and create a new narrative during this time of sabbatical? Or were you really trying to find what's that next thing?
So it's both. I experienced definitely, like, similar feelings of, like, where's my worth? What value do I deliver to the universe? Because at the same time, like, my kids are older, right? Like, my daughter is living out on her own. She's pursued her own career. My son's 16. He needs me less, right? Like, sure. So as a parent, you have this total shift happening. Not quite empty nester, but like some of that similar stuff that's happening.
Close. Yeah.
And I've been a mother figure, mentor to a team of people, to clients. Like, all of a sudden that's gone. Like, so where's my value? Like, what do I do? What's my purpose? Very hard. And so I had these fantasies of like, I'm going to do so much work in my garden. I have this really long list of things. Let me tell you, that closet that I didn't want to clean out when I was busy.
Is it still not clean?
All the time in the world. You still don't want to do it. Like, I chose.
All right. Thank you. I don't feel as bad now.
The things you chose to spend time on when you were busy, you made value-based decisions about how you wanted to spend your time. And so I didn't suddenly turn into Susie Homemaker when I had all this time on my hands, because you know what? Like, I didn't want to be Susie Homemaker, And so like, I repainted my office and I took care of my estate plan and a couple of things that I'd
put some pictures up behind you. You put up some cool art.
Yeah. The things I didn't want to do before, I still didn't want to do. And so it's a lot of fantasy projects, those things of like creative endeavors, or I think I would be good at this. And you go down these pathways and you test them out. So this is the beauty of a sabbatical and why I think everybody should take one once in a while, is you do get to test out these versions of yourself that you have in that fantasy back of your brain. Maybe you've got a Pinterest board, whatever it is, and you get to go down those paths and test them out. And like, again, part of this is neurodivergence. Sometimes doing it for like a hot minute, you satisfy the need, you tick the box, and you're like, that's cool. I feel like I've done it. Thank you very much. And then there's other projects that when you do them, now you want to do more of it. And you want to do more of it. And you're like, okay, that's not just a passing interest. That's not just going in the ADHD hobby box where you like go out and buy all the things on Amazon, and by the time they arrive, you are no longer interested in doing the hobby. There's like things you're really interested in. So I did a lot of writing, and writing as a tool of processing. I tested out a lot of things. I had the opportunity to try stuff through being on Accountants Council. So like Intuit was like, do you want to work on the training thing? Do you want to do some whatever? So I got to try a lot of things and go, no, that's not for me. No, I probably would never work for a major corporation. Yeah, that's cool. But I feel like I've ticked that box. And then I went back to school.
Oh.
So I had dropped out
back of school. To school for the art?
No.
Oh.
So I dropped out of school to start the firm. I never finished my undergrad, and I felt like there was this box I needed to tick, because I can't teach, and there's certain positions I'm not qualified for, no matter what else I've done in my career, unless I get this undergraduate degree. And Harvard Extension School is pretty flexible. It's, you know, some remote and some in-person classes.
Why Harvard? Because of the name, to say you went to Harvard?
No. So
I think that's awesome that you're doing it, because Harvard's a very prestigious name to put behind you. Like, that's dope.
So Harvard Extension School has been around since the 1800s. This is not something new they fired up during COVID, or something that's been around, you know, in the days of like University of Phoenix or whatever. It's been around because it was the back door for the Radcliffe College, which is the women's college portion of Harvard. It was how they would get the women's college students into the men's, the HBS classes. That was the antithesis of Harvard Extension School. And it's been around.
You're on the hero's journey here. You're going to save the women. But keep going.
So Harvard Extension School, when I was looking around, really had the more affordable, flexible option. And so there's some on-campus requirement. I live in Massachusetts. That's relatively easy. I had done some classes pre-COVID with them and been accepted as a full-time student. So it was easy just to fire it back up. And so, yeah, so being able to plug into that and really go deep on some things, I needed some guidance. I'm not a particularly good self-studier. I needed a guided experience. So
yeah, I feel you.
Worked really hard on the writing stuff. And worked really hard on neurodivergent study. So my degree ultimately will be in business with a certificate in social justice, and sort of understanding the world business is important. It moves money. It sustains us. but can we do it in a way where we actually do less harm and are good for people?
Where we do it sustainably. You didn't want to go straight to the sustain, sustains us and then sustainably. This is fascinating. So you're on that journey and you're on that path and you still may not know clearly what it looks like, but that's okay.
You know, I had done this webinar with Carbon during my sabbatical around neurodivergence in my firm. And a lot of the systems I had built in my firm, I built for me because my ADHD and my dyslexia required things to operate in a certain way. And I talk about this a lot is like when you put a wheelchair ramp on a building and you build an accessible space for people with mobility issues, you actually make it better for everybody. Right? So the wheelchair ramp isn't just for the person in the wheelchair. If you sprain your ankle, if it's a slippery day, as people get older and have a harder time with their knees, whatever it is, that wheelchair ramp serves everybody better, not just the person in the wheelchair. I built systems in my firm to help my ADHD and stay organized. But in the end, it actually works better for everybody. And so I wanted to spend some time last semester, like understanding why the rate of unemployment for neurodivergent individuals is 8 times the unemployment rate of people with other disabilities.
Mm.
And I'll,
I can speak on that from my own firsthand experience. I've gotten fired from a lot of jobs.
Yeah.
Most places I've worked for somebody else have gotten fired because I, as a divergent fellow here, I call my own shots because I have to make my own rules sometimes. I get bored real easy, or I see something and I know that there's a better way or there's a different way. I changed the way this whole franchise is run that I'm in because I'm neurodivergent. And I did things exact opposite of what they told me I should do in a system that is like, I would have gotten fired from Paget if they could fire me, but I'm paying them. Like they're not paying me. So they didn't fire me. They just eventually changed everything. They told me not to do something and I did it anyway. And then now their whole, all their franchisees are doing it that way. Like I know this because you can relate to that. You know how that is. You've got to do something differently because it doesn't make sense to you. The way it's being done don't make any sense. Why would you keep going door to door when you can advertise online and you can market online? Why would you go door to door to ask people for business? Like that didn't make any sense to me. I would get bored. That doesn't sound like the day I want to spend knocking on business doors. That's why they told me to market. And the tool that they were using was all everything hand keyed. They made their own tool. They made their own GL. It was a proprietary system. And I saw zero. And that made sense to me.
Right.
Like, look at that. Look at that. It's all automatic. Everything's done for you. I'm just going to use this. No, you can't. I'm going to do it anyway. Now everybody's using Xero. Xero's the reason Amanda's there and Jeff's there. So, you know, you look at it like that and say, okay, we did things that just made sense to us.
But Scott, I'm curious.
Everybody. Yeah.
When you're doing that, when you're having that moment where you're diverging from the norm, it takes bravery, right?
Like, oh, God, does it? To be on, how about this? Because this is the one I reflect on the most because nobody really saw it like I did. I was asked to be on stage at Scaling New Heights to perform a rap and nobody stood up. Everybody there, not just 2,000 people there almost, and nobody stood up. I felt like afterwards. After I got off stage, I felt terrible. Like everybody else is like actually cheering on and there was clapping. There was like everybody liked it and everybody told me that they liked it afterward and all that. But that was scary as hell. I'd never been on stage before either. So I just had this bright idea that I was going to do a rap. So that was scary as hell to answer your question. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think, and even if you have a ton of practice being different or going against the grain or doing something somebody tells you not to, it's still not scary. And sometimes until there's a proof point where like, there's a payout or there's a, like you get to sort of see the results. Like I'm constantly questioning myself. And so last semester I was working on this group project and I was like, we need this thing. And it doesn't matter what the thing is, but I'm like, we need this thing. And I
at Harvard, last semester at Harvard.
Last semester at Harvard. And there's two people in the group that not only disagreed with me, they were about it the whole rest of the way through the project, even though two other people in the group were like, yeah, there's buy-in. And they were dicks.
That hurts too. That hurts my feelings when people are mean because I'm doing something different. And they're like,
and they're people I respected and they're people I really liked. And like resume to resume, like one of them has a PhD, like in theory, more advanced than me. I start to question myself. I feel like crap the whole rest of the semester, but like we did the thing. We did the thing I said we needed to do. And so we're delivering it. It's a group project. You got to do something in real life. We're delivering it to the real life organization. And ultimately what we ended up building was this framework about inclusive language. So there's sentiment analysis, there's sustainability and inclusion, DEI kind of stuff built in. And then there's these other criteria. But one of my partners in this project codes it in Python, turns it into a ChatGPT thing, and ChatGPT actually reaches out to us. Not only is the customer we built it for like thrilled beyond thrilled, and it's going to change the whole way that they're able to run their business, and it's going to make some economic changes in the city of Austin for sure. But ChatGPT reaches out to us and tells my partner Audrey, like, hey, we'd like to buy this thing. And ultimately, I don't think we're going to sell it to ChatGPT, but we're firing up a business around this thing. And I'm like, but it took a lot of courage. Like, now I get to see the proof in the pudding. My gut was right. That intuition that we need this thing is right. This was not the initial project design. But I had to fight my way through like two people on the project that just kept telling me no and then acted like jerks the whole time and a mediocre grade. Like,
who cares about grades anymore though, right?
Like, but right?
Do you still care about grades like you used to? I'm curious because I did. I always thought my grade mattered. I thought that somebody was going to look at my grade. I needed to get 4.0.
So I have a husband who's wonderful that reminds me, and he's a PhD engineer. He's not a dumb guy, but he tells me every day, bees get degrees, Megan.
Bees get degrees.
Get degrees.
Yeah, but you're a high achiever. You need to get that A.
The high achiever, like overcompensator, traumatized child in me wants the A. But in the job hunt of like, what do I do now? I've only seen one company that asked to see your report card.
Really? People still ask to see
that? McKinsey wants to see your report card.
Well, actually, I mean, now that you say McKinsey does, that makes sense that they would because of the caliber of people that they're hiring. So you were actually looking at applying to McKinsey or did you apply to McKinsey?
No, I fell into the trap of like, okay. And I just told myself in January, I got to find a job. Like, it's awesome. My husband's supportive. I've got money. I've got a runway. Sabbatical's fun. But at some point, you got to get a job. And so I'm still open to a job, but it's not the be all end all. Like, I have enough consulting work and other stuff I'm working on that it's fine. But I did fall into the trap of like, okay, there's this deadline and I have to go find a job. And I start, you know, you fill out the resume and you like make your Indeed profile. And I realized really quickly, like, this is dumb because my skills and what I've learned building and selling a practice and my connections within the accounting community and the way that I think about software development, like all these things, this does not translate to a resume. And resumes now, particularly for big companies, go through this AI automated keyword search filtering system. And what I've done doesn't translate into that system. And I needed to reverse.
You're going to get biased by AI.
Yeah. So and how do you put like some of the stories I've told today, like how do you put that in a resume, right? Like it just doesn't.
Well, you don't.
You don't. So what I ended up
doing. I don't understand why somebody like you is looking for somebody else to hire you at this point. You don't need that.
Well, I do though. Lesson out of the group project is I'm a really good dreamer. I'm the visionary. I'm not the integrator. And so my best work that I've done in my career and on outside projects, I've founded nonprofits, I've done these other things, always came when I could bring the right energy and ideas and plans.
Who was your integrator at your practice?
I had paid staff over the years, different people. I had a woman named Jody Patterson with me for probably 15 years that was.
And she was your integrator.
And she was my integrator.
You found her.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I hired her because her job fired her and she was pregnant and she needed health insurance. Good things happen when I put the values first, right? But so you need to, I do best. This isn't true of everybody. I do best in collaboration with awesome people. And I am best when I am part of a group that's going to do something mm-hmm. cool because I'm good at thinking up the things. I'm good at seeing the pathway forward. I'm good at having a gut of like, hey, this group project needs this thing, but I don't code Python. Like, I needed to be a part of the right team of people to make something happen.
I'm only challenging you this because I see myself in you, and I know that it would be hard for me to get a job. I have a felony. I'm like, I can't get hired anywhere. I'm putting that handicap on myself, but it's created a superpower too on the other end. Yeah. It forces me to then do things on my own and find integrators in those things that I'm doing,
right,
which has always possible. It's always possible to find the integrator. They're the most quiet ones in the room.
Yep.
Most of the time, the integrators are loving the stuff that you're doing and they're fascinated by it and they want to help in any way they can.
Right.
And you can find that if you're passionate enough about what you're doing. And Megan, whatever you end up doing, you'll be passionate about it just as much as you were for Fogged In Books. I don't think you need to be hired by somebody, but that's just my own personal take on
it. It's a fast pathway to resources.
Okay.
Right. So,
and is that mean a way to make more money?
No. So,
because you can make a lot of money working for McKinsey. I've seen some W-2s.
True.
From that. No, it's, true. I don't know if they're getting 1099s or I'm pretty sure they're all getting W-2s because they would get like 18 of them because they'd get one in every state that they worked in. We've done a lot of taxes for McKinsey.
Big employees. Ideas. And I think stuff that's going to move the accounting industry and small business forward. Right. I can do that solo from my little office at Snow and Blair in Nantucket right here. Like, I can do some of that stuff. But if you want to do that stuff fast, to have a machine behind you that's well financially resourced and well personnel resourced and has systems and marketing machines and whatever around it, you can do that stuff faster. And I want to see some change in the accounting industry. Like, mm-hmm. I think we are at a pivotal moment that is calling for change, that where there is opportunity. And if I can plug into a bigger organization that can make some of that stuff happen faster than I can in my own little rowboat over here with maybe, you know, one or two funders.
On your little island.
On my little
30
island.
30 miles
off the coast. Figurative island. I want to plug into that stuff and make amazing changes because the accounting industry has done so much for me, Scott. Like, I was talking with somebody about this the other day. They were saying how their friend's been married for like 25 or 30 years. So like a real jerk. Because her credit's crap and she can't afford to leave. My ex-husband is a good guy. He's a great dad to his kids. The two of us were toxic together. It was abusive. It was not a healthy situation. I live in one of the most expensive real estate markets in the country. And I was able to leave my marriage, be financially solvent for my kids, keep a roof over the head, food on the table, maintain a business, because of what the accounting industry had allowed me to build.
Wow. Empowered you.
Right? I had no college degree. I built this thing from scratch. I broke all the rules. Accounting is an amazing career for women who want to balance either taking care of their parents or taking care of kids, having a home life and a family life. I really, and men, like, I want more men to have that in their lives. This is an amazing field we can do this in. But the 150-hour rule and the big five firms are telling us that it's not a lifestyle business. But I think it can be. And I want to create more pathways into this industry, especially for non-credentialed accountants and bookkeepers. And I don't think I can do that all by myself from this little office, teaching a couple of classes. Like, that reach is limited. So to be able to partner with larger organizations and take a role somewhere in a group where I can do that at hyperspeed on steroids, and hopefully have a real impact in the industry and make it more sustainable. That's the end game at this point. And so taking classes at school empowers that, keeps me busy, keeps me thinking, keeps me writing in the meantime. But that's the end game, I think.
Mm. Well, when you find that, please let me know. I would love to be a part of something like that. It sounds dope. That's what I'm doing here. That's what Accounting High is supposed to be. It just takes some time to build something from nothing. It's tough.
I think you're doing a great job, though. I think you're engaging the right people, having good conversations.
Thank you for the pat on the back. I appreciate it. I'm going to keep doing it. I almost quit doing it last couple months. As I had a point where I was just like, it's not rewarding anymore. It didn't feel good anymore. It didn't feel new anymore. And I wanted something new. It hasn't even been 4 years. I got to at least make it to senior year. This is only sophomore year. I almost dropped out. I was almost sophomore year dropout. I got to at least make it to graduation and then I'll pass it on to the next generation, the next set of kids that need it. Dope. Well, Megan, You've been an amazing guest faculty here at Accounting High. I hope that you don't get sucked up into Harvard and become too prestigious for us as we move up to Accounting U. I can't believe you're in Harvard. That is congratulations for getting into the program. That's added in and of itself. I mean, I know it probably cost a good amount of that buy money, I'm sure. How reasonable is it, like, for somebody that might be thinking about doing something like
it's
that?
More,
I know Rivers Cuomo,
yeah,
the lead singer of Weezer, did that.
It's more affordable than BU or on par with SNHU. Like, it really is a pretty affordable program.
Do they let you in if you got kicked out of your undergrad?
Mm-hmm.
Potentially.
It's a simple pathway too. You take four classes. As long as you pass those classes, you're eligible to apply.
Ooh, you might see me there one day.
They offer certificate programs too. Like, if you don't want a full bachelor's, like, they have a really good, like, the social justice, you can go just get a certificate. Yeah.
I really did finish. This would be like for an extended, because I actually finished at a private school at Campbell. So for me personally, I just like the idea of having Harvard near my name somewhere and saying, right, I did that. That's why I would do it. That would be pretty cool.
They have a good master. My program's a combined bachelor's master's. They have a bunch.
Cool. Well, that sounds awesome. Megan, thank you again for coming on. Thank you for sharing your story with our students and letting us know that this is real. Burnout's real. Everything, all those feelings you're feeling, not knowing where you're going to go, not knowing the next phase of the journey, that's okay. All that stuff's okay. You got to be just part of the journey. This is the hero's journey, and you're your own hero. You're the hero. I'm a hero of my story, and you, our students, is the hero of your own story. You got to tell your own story too. You can't let somebody else tell it for you.
Nope.
You got to be in front. You got the spotlight on yourself. So you got to make your choices, make your decisions, because from the chaos comes the clarity. So that's what you get out of it.
Pressure is a privilege.
Pressure is a privilege. Ooh. Ooh, keep them coming. Keep coming while I'm looking for our ride out song. Here we go. All right. Dope. Well, class dismissed.
May I have your attention, please?
From cloud accountancy way back to desktop accounting advisory and tech apps, adopt, went solo with the rap, Scotty's still the same, Raleigh is the spot where I edutain, like, share, connect, comment, follow this, and subscribe to our podcast, next one we drop, cause you know we don't stop, it's 24/7 on the Accounting High lot, TikTok clips don't watch, just some shitty tax talk, cleaning up accounting with a bucket and a mop. Then we lean back and nod because the class is about to start at Accounting High. Scotty, OKR.